Howdy! Thanks for tuning into Orion Photo Group's exclusive podcast. For each episode, we're going to dive into the lives of OPG's photographers and videographers across the country. We're going to talk shop, hear their stories, and listen to any advice they want to offer us up. So grab a tasty beverage and settle in for some fun conversations featuring our little community. That's you. Let's go! Welcome to another episode of Success Stories with the Orion Photo Group. I'm really happy with the guest that we have today. It's for all the people that I haven't gotten to meet everybody in person, and I was happy enough to meet Ryan during one of our happy hours in Cleveland. But I have Ryan Stargell here today, also known as AKA Red, is here today with us from Cleveland. And thank you for being on the show today. Welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thanks for welcoming me. I feel very welcomed.
Good. Speaking of Cleveland, I was watching my Jets play last night in the Hall of Fame game in Ohio, which actually is not in Cleveland. They were playing the Browns, but they were in Canton. So anyway, totally off topic.
As a Clevelander, I actually think that it's a sin to be a Browns fan because of the product they put out in the field.
You need to remember, I'm a Jets fan, so I feel your pain. I feel your pain on that. Yeah. Cool. All right. So, Ryan, I'm going to ask you some questions about you as a photographer today and kind of get to know you a little bit better. Are you born and bred out of the Cleveland area?
Kind of. I'm from Northeast Ohio.
Okay.
From Warren, I moved around a bunch, the various areas surrounding Cleveland, ended up in Cleveland proper for a good while, and finished up my formative years in the suburbs of Shaker Heights, went to school out here, John Carroll. But I've traveled quite a bit, so it's hard to feel solely Cleveland, but yeah, that's my life. I am a Clevelander.
Nice. Mm-hmm. And Cleveland is, I've always had a good time when I'm there. So according to your bio here, it says, yeah, Cleveland-based photographer. You began photographing things in homage to a late and great relative who taught me that that the point of pictures is to allow others to live vicariously through you. With a simple click, you tell a story of a person at that moment, singular in time, and you are honored for that privilege of telling a story on behalf of all of my couples. By the way, it's a great bio that you use on your portfolio page. I also have to mention that it's a great biopic, but I want to get into that in a second. But I love that story that you tell there. And I think many of us get involved in photography through somebody else who kind of turns us on to photography. So my first question is, tell me a little bit about this late great relative and, you know, kind of how that spark began for you as a photographer.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, can I jump back even further a little bit?
Yeah.
Before having this conversation with my relative. So I actually, my first foray into photography is, I used to work at a photo studio. It was Moto Photo Branch, but they also did a lot of, pro event photo was their main stuff. And so they did school photos, sports and stuff like that.
Okay.
And I worked with them for, I don't know, 6 years.
Wow.
I never took a single picture. I was the back end guy. I did all the editing. I did all the culling. I did all the sorting.
Wow.
I got really good at Photoshop. And also I did a lot of Excel stuff. So I was the guy, the guy behind making the photo run, but I wasn't a creative, one of the creators there. And so I never had an interest in pictures.
Interesting.
It was something that, there was no appeal whatsoever, at all. Not in the
slightest. It was just a job.
No, I liked what I did.
Okay.
The photography part of it didn't interest me.
Interesting.
Yeah. I got into photography and, you know, kind of backwards. Started on the editing side.
But, well, I have a question about that on the editing, not to cut you off, but like, do you feel like that spending that much time editing other people's pictures helped you when you did start taking pictures in the culling part?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm really good at culling. I can do it pretty quickly. Editing, I still take too long because one of my problems is that I would spend too much time retouching. They wanted retouching done in like, you know, they wanted just the basics. And I was like, no, we need to do this and this and this. We got to make this person paid us for retouching. We got to give them the best retouching they can get. And I had 1,000 pictures to go through. So every 1,000 people got the best retouching that I could possibly muster. And so I like what I did. So I always think that it kind of ties into how I got into photography. I think when you do something, you need to do it all the way. And so even though I was just supposed to do basics, I did all of
it. But they were lucky to have you then, because I don't think too many school and sports volume studios spend that much time on retouching. That's for sure.
I'm not saying I was any good, but I had a lot of fun.
Well, I'm sure you got better at it over time.
Yeah, I got a little better.
Cool. So tell me a little bit about this relative of yours.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, I studied abroad a couple times. I traveled a bit. And I lived in London for just a few months, I think 5 months. And then I came back and I was heading to Spain to study. I was going to study there for a year, and I lived in Madrid for a year.
Wow.
Yeah, that was fun. It was great. Great times.
Yeah, Madrid's a great city.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And yeah, there was a lot of learning I had to do there, too. But that's a whole different podcast. But I was heading to Madrid and I was talking to my grandmother's cousin. So she's in her late 80s, I think. And she's great. She's a wonderful lady. I would spend a lot of time with her growing up. She was 2 houses down from my grandmother, and I spent all my summers at my grandmother's house. Okay. But I was talking with her, and I mean, I'd known her my entire life, and I was telling her I'm going on this trip to Madrid. It's like, oh, Spain. I love Spain. I had no idea she had ever even left the country. Spain was like her favorite country in the entire world to go to. And so she was telling me all about it. And she says, make sure when you go, you take lots of pictures. And I was like, I mean, I usually don't really take pictures. Like, no, you got to take pictures. I want to see your trip when you come back. And I was like, okay, fine. I'll take pictures. And I kept it in my brain. I was like, I'll follow through. But I was like, I don't care. I went to, I had already been out of the country, I think, 3 separate times.
Wow.
And pictures were just things that I just thought that were, I don't know. I'm always anti counterculture, I guess. I'm always anti what everyone else is doing. And if I see a bunch of people taking selfies and stuff like that, it completely bores me. So I was like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a cliche. And so I didn't really take a lot of pictures because of my just counterculture brain. But anyways, when I go to Madrid, I actually do research a camera. And me and my girlfriend at the time, we researched and we actually bought a camera together that we kind of shared. She lived in Austria and I lived in Spain.
Wow.
We shared this camera. But
that's a long distance to share a camera.
I know. I was like, looking back, that's so not normal, but it seemed normal to me at the time. But yeah, I spent days, I don't know, weeks looking up. I remember it was a Canon CyberShot 280HS.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And it was a first camera. It was a really good camera.
Yeah.
It was a compact little point and shoot, but it was the first camera that actually had manual settings on it. And so I was like, okay, I learned that there's this whole world of technology that I never really knew was a thing. Because I saw that there's these dials on here and I saw that you could change. I learned it was called an aperture. It was had said F, you know, dash or whatever. And I was like, what does this mean? And I saw that, you know, I could figure out the seconds kind of. I was like, okay. And so I just tinkered with it. And I would click and I would take a picture in auto mode. And then I would see what those settings were and I'd figure out what I could do to make it, to recreate it on my own. And yeah, just, I'm a super huge tech head. I love technology. And I was like, okay, this is a whole world that I don't know. And like I said, when I do something, I like to go all in. I was like, I'm going to learn everything there is to know about photography. So I did. And I took, I don't know how many pictures. I took thousands of pictures, more pictures I've ever taken in my entire life. Because I was really excited about this new little toy that I learned. I also had limited time windows to use it because I was sharing it back and forth with this girlfriend of mine. and I also remember my promise to my cousin Betty. That was her name. Her name was Betty. And so Like I said, I'm taking lots of pictures, having lots of fun, doing lots of trips. And actually, while I'm over there, I get a call one day from my mother, and she tells me that my cousin Betty died. She passed while I was still over there in Madrid, and I couldn't attend the funeral. But even more importantly, I was like, oh man, I can't share my pictures with her. I was really looking forward to that moment when I get to get back and I could tell her the stories and I could say, Hey, Betty, I took all these pictures. Look at these pictures. And, cause I know just the way she had lit up when I told her I was going to Madrid and she was just so ecstatic for me.
Hmm.
That's when it clicked for me. I was like, this is something that's bigger than, you know, the Visco girl taking mm-hmm. pictures and selfies.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger than me having this enormous love for tech. It's about people.
Hmm.
And I learned years ago that's what I want to do. I want to connect with people. I studied international business in college for that reason. I was going to be an engineer. I decided I want to do people. And so that's when I realized the camera's about the person. It's not about the picture. It's not about the object. It's not about the settings. It's about a real human being in a moment and sharing that with others. And so, yeah.
That is such a good story. Like, I have like chills, like as you were telling me that. And, you know, the fact that she inspired you to take the pictures and you were doing it and you're sharing this little point and shoot and with your girlfriend back and forth. And then this person mm-hmm. passes away and she's left a legacy with you, even though mm-hmm. she never got to see. I like to believe that she sees every one of your pictures, but you never got to show her in person and interact with her. And that's really powerful. And I think that many of us as photographers, there's a spark that just turns us on to this medium. And most of the time, especially for people photographers, it's about making that connection with that person. And she put that spark inside of you. And you are very easy to talk to, and that interaction with people. It's one of the reasons why I like taking pictures of people as well, is being able to capture that moment. And, you know, our jobs in wedding photography is to capture them in their best moment, right? When they look the best. That's not always our job in all cases. But as an event photographer, we want to make them look as beautiful as possible. But mm-hmm. That's such a great story. But I think, you know, being able to learn, I think there's when it comes to this kind of photography, there's a part when I meet a photographer, I can tell within a few minutes of them, without seeing their pictures, I can tell whether or not they're good shooters right away mm-hmm. based on their personalities, because there is a piece of you that you need to give to someone when you take their picture and you have to interact with them, right? And I see that in you. I see that in your smile. And I see that you put people at ease. And I think that as a wedding photographer, that's the first thing you need to do mm-hmm. is to just take that guard down and put people at ease. And the most successful ones, when you look at guys like Jerry Guiones or people, Sue Bryce, when they take your picture, they immediately pull the guard down and make you feel like you're an important person. I could see you do that as well. But man, what a great story. It's I have to say it's one of my favorite stories that I've heard in doing all of these podcasts.
I'm very glad that she left that with me. You know,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sure she's very proud of you as well. So and Madrid is, I mean, what a great place to spark an interest in photography. Like I've only been there once. I taught a workshop there about 8-9 years ago and got to spend like 4 or 5 days with other photographers in Madrid, and it was just a magical experience. And my favorite part was going to those little places where we got meat and beer after all of our shoots. The food there is unbelievable.
Oh yeah, yeah. I lived in London the year before that.
Not so good. For such a great city, the food is horrible there.
London is, it's the cultural hub of everything. So you can find, a good curry or a good,
Oh, for sure.
Japanese or, something. You're not gonna find good English food or good American food either. But yeah, English food is it's an acquired taste. And you
Yeah.
have to acquire the 30 years of living as an Englishman.
If you like to drink warm beer and good French fries or chips, as they call it, then you're in the right place. But the beer is actually very good there, so there are some great things. Cool. Well, and do you feel like the traveling, and most Americans don't do a lot of traveling abroad, which I think is a shame. Do you feel like those that travel abroad really help kind of round you off from a cultural perspective and being a photographer today?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You said most Americans don't like to travel, and then my wife is in that box. She does not like to travel. But I'm getting passports for her and all the kids because of the fact that just traveling. I remember the very first time I traveled somewhere. I went to Mexico in high school with my family on a cruise, and just the very first time I ever had that experience of, whoa, there's something different. It doesn't hit everybody the same way, I'm
No.
certain, but still, when it hit me, I was overwhelmed. I was like, whoa, there's a lot of cool stuff out here that I never even knew. It's like your brain unlocks.
Yeah.
That's really what I felt. And so yeah, so being able to see new places and experience new things definitely makes me feel, I don't know, more whole and complete. Makes me feel more well-bodied. But just the challenges you have to face when you live abroad.
Especially language barrier.
Yes, exactly. I'd studied Spanish for almost my entire life, and so I'm pretty good. I was ranked in America in Spanish. When I got to Spain, I was like knocked on my butt. Try to speak Spanish. Oh my goodness, it was coming at me a million miles an hour. Everything's in Spanish, and Spanish people really, at least back then, they really didn't know English. It wasn't common. I could go to Germany and I could find a lot of people who could speak English. In Spain, it was a higher there's a higher rate of illiteracy there, first of all. But then also, just a lot of people just don't speak English because of cultural pride. And so yeah, so definitely the language barrier is a real thing. But also, you got to navigate. You got to get around. You have to get to school. I had to get to my internship. I had to figure things out. And actually, when I first got there, I didn't have a place to live, and so I had to find an apartment. I'm apartment hunting in Spanish. As so, I don't know how many different apartments I went to and toured, but I gotta not get ripped off. And I gotta find a safe place to live, and I gotta do it all in a foreign country and in a different language. So yeah, once you go through that kind of a thing,
Could
lots
pretty
of
much handle anything at that point.
yeah, you get perspective, and not as many things feel hard. So when, for example, my last wedding, my bride was having a little bit of a meltdown because her dress got a little dirty, and I could relate. I can understand that she was upset in the moment. But her little freak out wasn't something that's going to rattle me because of the fact that I know that there's a lot of harder things out there. There's a lot of harder things. And so when you have that perspective, you can just, I don't know, you can compartmentalize the difficulties that you experience in anything. And so.
And that comes from maturity as well as the years go on when you're shooting. You're a lot younger than me. But the one thing that I learned was, how to handle that situation where a bride is just complete, or groom, or family member is melting down, and a lot of times it can be directed at you, regardless of whether or not they mean to or not. And one of the things that I learned over the years was to, if you can, especially if it's a bride, is to they respect you, because you're an outside influence, and a family member can't just go up and be like, "Yo, you just need to chill," right? Because that bride will just literally bite their head off. But you can go to them and say, "Hey, look, I've shot a lot of weddings. What you're experiencing is difficult. I understand. And if I can offer any advice and take it for what it's worth, please take a breath. and let's get through this together as a family, and me as, you know, helping you so that you can get the pictures that you've dreamed all of your life. I know it's going to be really hard, but if whatever you can do, can you push it aside and try and make this work for you so that we can get some great shots? And 9 times out of 10, I would find that, and it takes a lot of, it takes a little lot of guts to do that, because I've had brides completely melt down at me, like, who the fuck are you? Like, blah, blah, blah. Excuse me. Sorry, everyone who's just listening. Like, it's happened to me. Like, it can backfire on you. And you just retreat and say, I tried, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's, it does take maturity. But like you said, in having those experiences and seeing all those different things that round you off to understand and help you see, the bigger picture. As far as that's concerned. So
you're really good at this, by the way. That speech you just gave to our imaginary bride, that was like Oscar worthy.
and like you, I also have had some really great mentors in my life and people who inspired me. I started shooting weddings when I was a high school senior, like my first wedding shot.
I remember this.
Yeah. I was a senior in high school, and you know, he threw me to the wolves. And I did it, and he knew, you know, I'd been working with him a good year and a half at that point. And he says, this one, I know you can do it. And I didn't shoot the whole wedding, but, you know, I remember a couple weddings after that, like knocking on the door as a 17, 18 year old kid and be like, hey, I'm your wedding photographer. And they would be like, do you even shave yet? Yeah. And it was really about getting their guard down immediately and finding those ways. And he taught me those things. He taught me those. Mm-hmm. Ways of you know, what, by watching him and watching how he worked and trying to get people to, and sometimes it was a little cringy, as my daughter would say. sometimes it was a little cringy in the way that he did it, but I learned how to do things my way that I felt were less cringy, and the clients responded to it. So I was very lucky, and I also had some very good mentors that taught me how to be a good photographer and via lighting and things like that, and working hard for them and put in that time with them, which actually leads me to my next question. So, you've been shooting with the Orion Photo Group, and are you doing weddings on your own as well?
No, actually, this year, well, actually, really since doing Orion, let me think. I think since I started second shooting with Orion a few years ago, I actually just kind of put my own things on pause, because I still work full time, and I've got 3 little kiddos now, and so
that's right.
So I shoot with Orion, and I get my fulfillment of connecting with people, get a little bit of pay from it, and then I kind of like, okay, that's enough. this is mostly a part time part for me, but it's a part time that I really get to enjoy, and I get to enjoy it that way.
Yeah, and many of the photographers that shoot for OPG are people who work a full-time job and have kids but still really like to do weddings, and they do that, or they're working towards, you know, building their own studio, building their own portfolio. So my question, you know, is kind of like, how do you feel like, you know, as you're doing more and more weddings with them and doing it with OPG, how has that helped you build your portfolio? And, you know, are there lessons that you've learned? Because you're working with, you know, different associates every week, or when you are, you know, how is that helping you? I'm still here.
Yeah. So really working with Orion, first of all, like I said, I started second shooting. And I had a small portfolio.
That's right.
When I started with them, mostly because I'm really, really, and still, I'm really bad at I'm really good at sorting. I'm bad at collecting all my pictures that I like and putting them somewhere. I'm really bad at that aspect. And so getting my pictures out somewhere on there on a portfolio, so I've had a small portfolio, hadn't shot a lot of weddings to really have a large one anyway. But shooting with Orion, especially when I started second, it was great getting an opportunity to just connect with so many different people, take so many different shots, when I was still an associate, I would just connect with a lot of different leads. And so I got to see, you know, different styles of shooting. The connecting with people part, I think I already had that pretty dialed. I think there's obviously growth, but I think I had that one pretty figured out. But seeing the different ways that you could shoot and different pictures you could capture, that was great. It was really eye-opening. I remember I think the first great picture that I actually really, like, I was shocked that I took was shooting with Conrad. He's a lead with you guys. And he just worked the bridegroom into a certain position that he then let me shoot from and let me shoot with. And also he's really good at letting me jump in and out. We would work pretty well together. He's a good guy. Scratch that. There are lots of pictures that I took great with Conrad because of him, because of those moments. The first one I remember taking was the bride. I had he was somewhere else. He was shooting with the grooms. And he said, "Hey, I want to go over to the bridal suite. Just you know, keep them entertained and make sure you get good pictures." And so he let me have whatever I wanted to do with the brides, because I never really get to shoot the brides.
Right.
As an associate, never get to really shoot the brides. And so, yeah, he gave me a lot of free reign to try it out, and because he had already gotten his pictures. Or he was coming later. I don't remember how exactly it worked. But anyways, because of all the time that I shot with him, I was able to direct the bride into a pose where, you know, she's just absolutely gorgeous. It was my favorite picture I had taken up to that point, and she was so gorgeous. But it was because of something that I learned just with shooting with Conrad, just seeing how he would talk to people and how he would get people in certain spots. That's one of the great things I think I learned as a second. Mm-hmm. Is just watching great photographers get people into the right positions, because that's something that you only get with practice. You can watch videos. I watched so many videos.
Watch all the YouTube videos you want, but until you're out there doing it in person...
Yeah.
It is, and thanks to Conrad for being, you know, so awesome. And in those situations, it's like Mike, myself, or many other people who are learning how to shoot. In those situations, it's like you're shooting with a net, right? Because you have the photographer right there who, if you stumble or you're just not getting what you want, he can be there to help you real quick and step in. You know, brides don't want to be, you know, guinea pigs, but at the same time, they are happy to see you learn with them, and it does help. So that's awesome. And I love to hear stories like that. And I love, you're one of the few people that I've interviewed who's gone from an associate to a lead. And, I think that experience is really important. And now you can take everything that you've learned, and now, you know, you got to pay it forward with the associates yourself, but also, you know, can continue to learn. You never stop learning. Every shoot that you do, I feel like you're learning something different. And when you stop learning, even today, I was out doing my kids, my daughter's cheer photo shoot. We shot the cheer team and we were out there, and I went out there with a goal to do something different. And, you know, some of the shots came out great, and I learned a little bit while I was there. And even after 30 years, you can still learn. So it's always a learning process for you. But I want to go back to, you know, maybe offering some advice to you as far as, and this is for everybody out there, as far as the portfolio and culling and putting things together. So, you know, I'm looking at your portfolio, and, you know, the first thing that I notice is that one of the most important things is a great bio photo, which a lot of photographers just don't have. You look, and there's a couple things that you want to have in those images. Is you want to look approachable, you want to look friendly, and would this person be somebody I'd want at my wedding? That's the things that the bride's going to be asking when she looks at your bio photo, and you check all of those boxes in that image. Coupled with a great bio photo write-up, which most don't read, but when they do, it should be good. And then, you know, I can see in your images too that, you know, they're relaxed. There's some great getting ready pictures. And, you know, you have lots of, you know, different types of photos in there, including a few engagement photos, which is, you know, what you want in a decent portfolio. Now, as far as like when you go out and shoot other weddings, here's my advice to you that I can offer as far as culling those images. Yep. You should try and gather those images before you upload to OPG. gather them in one spot and spend 1 hour. That's all I ask, culling and looking at those images. And okay. When you're looking at those images, you're thinking of just for yourself. It's not for your portfolio. You're thinking to yourself, it's a yes, no. So you whatever, whether you're using Bridge or Lightroom or whatever culling software you want to use to look at the images, Photo Mechanic is good too. It's yes or no. So you're looking at the images and you're just arrow button, right? Arrow button, arrow button, arrow button. Yes, yes, yes. It's that immediate reaction. Is this a good picture? Yes. Great. I'm going to keep that image and maybe you flag it with a color code or whatever it is, but be brutal with it. You can go through 1,000 pictures and only pick three. It's totally fine, right? Mm-hmm. What you're looking for in that first pass is the best photos that you took the entire day, and take those images. Don't even worry about retouching them. Take those images and put them on a folder someplace. Just call it your favorites and whatnot. And even if you don't get to it, as you're shooting through the wedding season, if you make 3 photos, 5 photos, 10 photos from each one of your weddings, it's fresh in your mind. Mm-hmm. And those will be your best photos every day of the week. Okay.
Yeah.
And then when you're ready to start, when you need to go back and you want to update your portfolio, it's really easy to do it because the images are already there. You don't have to go through a bunch of weddings and call through them and stuff like that. And and that should be the way you kind of tackle everything is you just gather the images one at a time, and then you can worry about them later. And I also like to keep them in raw files. So like your raw files, if you shoot JPEG, raw JPEGs, keep them in raw files because your editing style changes over the years. So you may edit that image and then use it in your portfolio. But I evolve in the way I process my images.
That's definitely true.
And it would be a great way to come back to an image later and reprocess it for, a newer style, a new preset or this or that. Mm-hmm. And this way you can stay current. So that's my advice on that. All right. One more question. We're at 32 minutes. What gear are we shooting with? What's my gear kit look? What's your gear kit look like?
Well, as a tech kid, I could talk tech. I could talk gear all day long. I shoot with the Sony A9.
Okay.
It's from 2017, but I think one of Sony's top five cameras. Yeah, it's great. I got it used a couple years ago at a super great deal. Buy your stuff used.
Totally great.
Oh man. So I shoot with the Sony A9, and then I've got my lens kit has kind of changed. I would use a lot of primes originally, but since shooting weddings now, I actually use zooms a lot more often. I think there are a lot of photographers out there who can use primes and just primes around the wedding. I don't think I'm that good to do that, so I use zooms. I do have a 35 actually on my camera right now. I'm looking at it. It's 35 1.8. On my other camera, I have a Sony A7 III as my backup.
Okay.
It's a 85 1.8.
Okay.
And then I've got a 50 that I don't use anymore. I haven't used it in a while. I used to use it all the time for my weddings. Haven't used it at all this wedding season, or even I think I stopped using it in the last wedding season. But I've got a 50.
Okay.
And then I've got a I actually have a 35 to 150 f/2 to 2.8. Tamron released one last year.
Yeah.
And it's like $2,000. Samyang released one this year. And I pre-ordered it. I got it. It was one of the first people to get it. And it was like, $1,200. So it was $800 less. Hmm. And it's been fantastic. 35 to 150. So you get that whole huge range.
That's a huge zoom. Yeah.
I know. Exactly. And it's starts off at 2 and goes up to 2 all the way up to 50 millimeters. And then it's 2.8 the rest of it.
Okay.
So it's a 2.8 constant zoom throughout the whole aperture. I'm throughout the whole zoom range. So I use that a lot too. So I actually, if I'm using two bodies, I will now typically use that and then my 35, just so that way I have a wide angle up ready to go real quick so I can flip that back up. I usually don't shoot super wide. I've never owned anything wider than a 35. I like telephoto looks more, just personal taste. So I used to always use an 85 is what my common prime was.
Yeah, that's a tough prime to shoot weddings with.
I know.
For portraits, yes, that's a great lens for portraits. And is the A9, is that a full frame or is that a crop sensor?
Full frame. Yeah, okay. I started off years ago shooting with an A6000, which was a crop sensor. And I would use a 50 on that. So that was equivalent to like a 75. Oh, and I do have a Tamron 70 to 180 2.8. That was my long zoom before I added the 35 to 150. But right now, usually most weddings, I'm using the 35 to 150, 85 for portraits.
Okay.
Still use that, and then the 35. And then I've got a lot of flash gears. I got all my Magmod kits. I've got some 8200 Pro, speed light. I can't remember the number of right now. It's a Godox speed light.
Yeah.
But yeah, lights are super, super crucial. I remember Anthony, he started shooting with OPG earlier this year. He's a friend of mine. And he never used lights. He's like, I don't need lights. I was like, at a wedding, you're going to need them at some point. If you're going to shoot and you're going to really shoot, you're going to need them. And so, yeah, then he finally discovered that, yeah, you need lights. It's not crucial for everything, but, you know, dark receptions. It also, it can just change you creatively.
Yeah. But, I'm a big flash guy. That's a Guinness Book of World Record behind me
for
the most camera flashes ever used to make a photograph. So I'm the flash guy. And I do think that, like, unless you live in a place like Mexico or California, where most of the weddings are going to be outside, like, you know, in Cleveland, in the Midwest, like, in pretty much almost everywhere, at some point, you know, you're going to go inside and you're going to have a reception. You need to know how to use a flash on your camera, off your camera. And it, I'm a big believer in using flash all the time. Mm-hmm. So, I think that it does add a lot of, spark to it. And it definitely makes you separate you from the other iPhone pictures, in general. Exactly. But that's interesting about the zoom lenses. I was a zoom guy for a long time, and now I'm pretty much just a prime shooter. It was at the end of my career. But I think, you know, I used to shoot. What's that?
Are you at the end? You said the end of your career. Are you at the end of your career?
End of my wedding career. I haven't shot a wedding in almost 10 years now. So I can't say that I shot my last wedding. Who knows when I'll get pulled back in again. But at the end of my wedding career, I was just shooting with primes. And I did everything with a 24-50 and an 85. But I was able to do that because I always had a second shooter and an assistant who also shot a lot as well. So, and they would shoot with different lenses as well. So, you know, it's easy to say you can just shoot with primes because I was really just looking for the money shot all the time.
Exactly.
But if you're a solo shooter, or you're just coming with an associate that you don't know that well. Zoom lenses are a good way to go. So, thank you for sharing your stories with us. And, we're going to dedicate this episode to Betty. Thank you, Betty, for inspiring Ryan and, being, a person who, you know, I love people that put that spark in people like that. And, so this episode's for Betty. And thank you so much for being on this week's episode. Thank you for sharing your stories with us.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It was certainly a pleasure. Thanks for listening to me. Thanks for dedicating to Betty. She was awesome. So I'm glad that her memory gets to live on in this podcast.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Cool. Well, that's another episode of Success Stories. If you'd like to be on an episode of Success Stories, tell your story like Ryan. And I'd love to hear them. I love all of these stories, and I'd love to get to know photographers and videographers who work for OBG. Come on the show and you get a $25 B&H gift card, which Ryan will receive after we get off today. And we'll see you on next week's episode of Success Stories. Take care, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
All right, that'll do it for this episode featuring OPG's Best of the Best. Would you like to be featured in an upcoming episode, or do you have a suggestion for somebody you'd like to hear from in our little community? Please email me, jgroup with two P's at orionphotogroup.com. That's jgroup at orionphotogroup.com. I look forward to hearing from you and hearing your suggestions. We hope that you enjoyed this episode, and I look forward to hearing from you and your story. That's it for now. We'll see you on the next episode. Have a great day.